Welcome, everyone, to this very special edition podcast series on the 2020 Bitcoin halving, brought to you by our friends at Bitstamp, the original global cryptocurrency exchange. Since 2011, Bitstamp's been the preferred exchange for serious traders and investors everywhere, trusted by over 4 million customers, including top financial institutions. Check them out because they've got some serious professional-grade trading technology, including matching engine from NASDAQ, some of the best APIs in the industry, and TradeView, their advanced trading interface with live charting and deep analytical tools available on web and mobile. Join 4 million traders and download the Bitstamp app from the App Store or Google Play, or visit bitstamp.net/pro to get started. That's bitstamp.net/pro. And for Bitstamp users, we've got a special. Ansari is now offering 25% off Ansari Pro, our professional-grade crypto analytics toolkit with best-in-class research and advanced tools to help you identify your next investments. Head over to Ansari.io and use the offer code Bitstamp to get ahead of the crypto curve. That's Ansari.io, offer code Bitstamp. With that, let's dive right in. This episode's going to be a good one. All right, everyone, welcome back to Ansari's Unqualified Opinions. I'm Ryan Selkis at 2BitIdiot with a special friend, fellow BC Eagle and veteran crypto trader Dan Matuszewski, who's the one of the co-founders and partner at CMS Holdings. He is the former head of Circle Trade, the OTC trading desk at Circle. He has been around the block. He and I knew each other way back in 2013 when I first got into the industry, and he was already a grizzled vet. Working with our friend Alec at Bay Hill Capital back in the very, very early, hairy, gnarly days of crypto trading, and even before 2013, 2012 variety. Were you in 2011?
No. Well, I mean, like, I knew about it, but I had no action on it. So I said this before, like, we used to talk about it on the desk at Bay Hill for, like, years before we, like, ever did anything with it. And it was just kind of like this weird sideshow thing. It'd be like, oh, like, it's got some value now, like, it's weird. Like, we didn't act on it, obviously, as early as we should have, but it just seemed to be like a thing that we knew and was like around. I don't know. It was kind of an odd, like, there was no like definitive point where I'm like, oh, like I discovered this and it was like the moment. It was just kind of there. And we just like, I don't know. We shot the shit around it.
So this series that we're doing is specifically around the Bitcoin halving this time around. You know, what does it mean? Does it mean anything? Is it kind of lost its luster? And so, you know, let's start at the beginning with you, just shooting the shit on the desk at Bay Hill. First halving is late 2012. Where were you in the kind of journey down the rabbit hole? Was this kind of the first halving still pre you guys taking it seriously? When did this start to come into focus?
We definitely weren't taking it seriously. It just wasn't big enough. Like, it was still just too small an asset class. So the people on the desk had personally gotten involved in it, but we weren't doing anything in any like capacity. We never really did a ton in like a real buttoned up capacity in the fund, mostly for like compliance reasons. It was never clear we could, but like we definitely had some exposure to it, like individually, but we were really just like sort of following it along as like, this is a cool, like the same way you would like take a bet on something and like everybody was like we used to do weird stuff too, right? Like somebody find some random company and we'd like buy it, and like it was just like a lottery ticket, and this was kind of like the same bucket that this whole thing was in for a while, until like it started to get a little bit bigger and a little bit like realer as like a, not a movement, but like as an asset class that was like investable. Like the real key turning point, at least for me, was like when we started providing liquidity to some of the exchanges, and this was like around the BitFloor early Kraken. I think we were on Kraken like as soon as it got started. We're like pumping out a two-way on that thing. And that was like when we were like, we're firmly committed to it as like something we were going to do. But even then it was tiny, like the notionals were small. Like we were hoping we would make a couple grand, maybe a month. Like it wasn't like a real big shot in it, but to be fair, Alec, the guy who was the main sort of figure at Bay Hill, he was around when the euro got created. So like his initial thing on this thing, whole thing was like, look, like I've seen the birth of a currency before. Like I've gone through this. Like he was making markets in the options pit for euros. And he was like, I get this. Like this makes a ton of sense to me, like how this could like evolve. And he's like, but this thing's got to go a lot higher. He's like, if this thing's going to be like real as a currency. And this was back, I think, when everybody was like sort of still treating it as like a currency and like had like a payment angle that hadn't like completely died. So he's like, it's got to go just higher. He's like, it doesn't make sense. It's like a base to anything at like these levels. So his like whole thesis was like, we could trade around it, but you should just be long it. Like, that's kind of, he's like, it doesn't make sense here. Like, if it's going to be a thing, you're going to make money on the trading side anyway, you should just be long it, which was right. Yep. It was 100% like the right like aspect of it. So that worked out for a lot of guys, like sort of on the desk.
So when, so I guess 2013, then you start taking a little bit more seriously and thinking about it at a fun level. There's a few years in between here when you're coming up the Bitcoin learning curve. What were some of the things that made you go full hook, line, and sinker? Because Bay Hill was not just crypto, but no, obviously you made you made this shift pretty quickly to Circle up in Boston.
Yeah, so actually I did a stint at Kraken for 6 months in the interim. So yeah, before Jeremy had even raised any money. So I guess it also, like, we never actually traded crypto out of Bay Hill. It was all like done side pocketed. Like, we had like I like effectively ran like a family office like on the side, so like we would do stuff through that, and then like we were all like individually trading. But like, there, for compliance reasons, it just, we never touched it in the fund. We did look at potentially doing some equity investments in a bunch of companies at the time, which is how we got to know Kraken really well. And then obviously we like put some markets on that thing when it got out. But it was like, it was way back. Like, this was Silk Road was like the main thing people knew about Bitcoin. Like, those were indistinguishable for like most people, where one was and the other like ended. So like, it was way worse than it was now. And also, it was probably impossible to have banking back then. Cause like, if you remember Coinbase got that Silicon Valley Bank account, and they just like dominated the US scene. Like, it was impossible to hold down like a US bank. Like, every exchange that we were dealing with that had a bank at some point was like losing it overnight. And we knew that our own banking would get shut down. And like, we're not gonna put the whole fund at risk because like, we wanna like do some Bitcoin trade. Like, it just, like, in the opportunity cost, like, wasn't there either. So that's really why that never became like a big thing. And banking was a huge problem for 2013, 2014, 2015, until Silvergate really became a dominant force and started taking the action. It like was bad. Cause like, it was, the Coinbase ends up losing SVB, right? They go to Metropolitan, and then Metropolitan gets swapped out with like Silvergate. So anyway, like, it was a dicey time for banking on that side. But anyway, so when Bitcoin runs up, so actually even before that, so I was making markets on a bunch of exchanges. It was like Bitfloor, it was Gox, it was like Kraken. There was a couple other smaller ones that died. CampyX, we used to do a bunch on. I don't even know what happened to them. But, and Bitstamp, a handful in there. So I was pretty active on the trading side, and the notional started getting bigger going into like that first 2013 run, right? So like, that big jump up, I was like, all right, there's something here. There's enough that you can potentially carve out a career. But that being said, there's no active trading role that's going to make sense. I was like, there's just only a handful of investable corporates that are out there that are making enough money or could potentially make money. And they were all exchanges, right? Like, those were the only dominant models that were like doing anything. Like, even the desk that's Genesis now, that was part of Second Market, like, it was a side piece of like their much bigger desk that they were like operating and still trading like auction rate securities and like other stuff on. So I'm like, all right, where am I going to go if I like really want to do this? And the other backdrop of this is like, Bay Hill is like, they're not doing poorly, they're not doing well. It's just kind of like floating. So the backdrop of that is Bay Hill's fund was like what's called volatility arbitrage, which would have made a killing actually in the last like 4 or 5 months, but otherwise it like kind of like grind down. And like, the whole way it really makes money is their vol, which is like being options, are underpriced in names that are historically low vol, right? Like, your big giant corporates like J&J and not Amazon, because it like kind of flies around, but like companies that you don't think really move and are boring, like, the vol is really cheap, right? But you go and look at like a high flyer, like a tech stock, like randomly, like AMD, right? Like, it's going to be really expensive to buy options. But when the world blows up, as we saw 3 or 4 weeks ago, everything just kind of dies at once, right? Like, everything goes down and beta becomes one, right? So like, the world falls apart and vol converges amongst all those names, right? It just gets really expensive across the board. So you end up making a ton of money because you're long all this like options on these boring stocks that never move, that are suddenly whipping around, and then you're shorted on these like high flying names, but they're just moving around a ton as they always move around a ton. So anyway, that strategy is really good when the world's falling apart. And that was like great in 08, 09 in the financial crisis. And I got hired on the back of that. So I get started in 2010, and basically market just grinds up like 15 basis points a day indefinitely for years, right? Until basically 3 months ago. So it was just kind of slowly grinding up a little bit. And like, I was looking for another opportunity was a big thing on this. So I was like, crypto is interesting. I'm young. I can take a flyer on this. Let's just see what's out there. And I'd gotten to know Jesse really well at Kraken from the trading activity. I think like at the height, was doing something like 25% of like the aggregate volume on Kraken. So like knew him pretty well, like was in touch about like issues that we'd had with the exchange, took like issues with deposits, withdrawals, order entry bugs, like yada, yada. And I was like, hey, like, what are you guys doing? Like, what are the plans? I went out to a conference in San Francisco. I think it was like the CoinAlt conference, and met up with him. And he's like, hey, we're looking to hire a trader. Would you ever be interested? And I was like, jackpot. Like, yeah, like I'm in. Like, so I'll do this. So went to work for Kraken for 6 months. And then I was living in Boston still at the time. I haven't really left. And I was going out to San Fran for like a month, coming back. And Jeremy and Sean raised at Series A, and it was like super secretive. It was like, it was a Bitcoin startup, but it wasn't a Bitcoin startup. And like, nobody really knew what's going on. But I shot him an email and I was like, hey, I'm in Boston, I'm doing this. Like, there's not probably a lot of people that are like doing this. Like, we should at least like be in touch. Got to know them and eventually like parlayed that into like a job. So I left Kraken, went to work for them. And that was a better fit because like, it was local. Like, I hated working from home. It was like a nightmare. Like, and I was like 3 hours removed. It was just like a much better fit. So, and like love the Kraken guys to death, like still talk a lot with them, like very happy with like, and they've been massively successful, like much more than I ever like thought that thing was going. But so anyway, that was how I like landed at Circle and then traded there for the last got like 5 years I probably put in through there. And then the most recent thing is spun out with Bobby and a guy named Julian who worked even with me at Bay Hill and like startup CMS. So that's like sort of my range. So it's like back of 2012 to like now is my origin into this whole thing.
So basically, good way to sum up, completely oblivious really to the first halving. It was just kind of a non-issue. We know that there's a 21 million max limit and it's fun to trade and it's the birth of a currency, but really, you know, it's not really a huge event.
It was so inconsequential in the trading activity because it was so demand driven, right? Like the price was so cheap that like any single person looking to like come in and buy $500,000 of Bitcoin was going to like just bully it around. So like while the supply mattered, like for a longer term sort of thesis, it was so driven day to day by chunky random order flow. And like you'd get like a headline on like Bloomberg and like the price would shoot up 15%. Like it was just randomly getting shocked all over the place. And the plumbing was really bad in terms of like the piping for like getting cash and stuff around. Like the halving mattered, but it mattered a lot less than I think the demand side of the equation at that time. So,
I fast forward a couple of years, you're at Circle. And the industry is obviously a hell of a lot different, right? There's hundreds of millions of venture capital raised, a lot of that by Circle, and Coinbase and Kraken and some of the other major players. But we just come off the 2015 bear market, and that one was actually, you know, an existential threat to many of the top businesses in the space. Towards the end of that cycle, when did you start to get the sense that, you know, we could see another rally, and how did the narrative around that 2016 halving come into play, if at all? Because this is kind of a black box for a lot of people. Like we're thinking about today's halving. We think about these as big milestones. You look at them kind of after the fact and you say, well, this is, you know, this is clearly like an NF2, but it's still a pretty clear correlation between the demand and supply shocks that happen around these events. Did you feel that at the time, or was this just like, how did this play into the trading strategy?
So like, I think this is, so just as like on a side, like the problem with like all these event driven things and like crypto, besides the fact that there's like not a lot of them, is like Bitcoin's just gone up, right? So like whatever signal you have, if you like extrapolate out 3, 6, 12 months, like it's gone up. Like, yeah. Like this is like a real issue that I find with all these people that are like making all these models, is like whatever your signal was, like, chances are, like, Bitcoin went up after it. So it's like, I get it, but like, the thing's just been a rocket ship for the last existence of it, right? So 11 years or whatever the heck we're on, like, now. Like, so I find a lot of those arguments, like, this thing is the reason it, like, went up, is like, so it's noise a lot. But that being said, like, I think you hit it on the head, like, where, like, there was this existential crisis going on with a lot of companies. Like, 2014, 2015, like, it was terrible. Like, it was bad. Like, people were, like, puking it. They were like, this is dead. You started hearing this, like, all around people. They were like, yeah, we're in Bitcoin, but we just, like, don't care about the price. Or they'd be like, yeah, we use it for, like, payment rails, but, like, we don't have exposure to, like, the pricing. It was weird. Like, corporates were trying to do everything they could to make it seem like they didn't have exposure to it, because mm-hmm. it was just getting crushed constantly. So you had to, like, it became toxic to, like, be trying to, like, be long it as, like, a corporate. Like, it was hard. And especially if you were trying to, like, raise financing, you couldn't make it seem like you were, like, super tied to it. There was, like, that big corporate that blew out on Bitstamp, right? That, like, big bear whale incident. Like, that mm-hmm. was supposedly somebody who took, like, a big chunk of their financing from their venture round and stuck it in coin. Won't comment on who I think it is, but, like, it was bad.
Well, to tell people that don't remember about the bear whale, because this is a part of trading lore in and of itself.
I wish I was better with dates. Everything gets real fuzzy. But so somebody just starts walking Bitstamp down, right? And when I say walking down, is like, they just are selling pretty much, like, agnostic to, like, what's going on in the market for, like, I don't know, a couple of days, right? They're slamming bids and they're, like, putting really big offers, slamming bids. So clearly somebody's working at a risk. And we get to, it was 300, right? That was the price. I'm, like, pretty sure it was 300. And yep. they just say, like, I don't care anymore. And they put the whole thing out as one offer. And it's a ton of coin. Like, in today, it isn't a ton of dollars, but at the time it was massive. So there's just a
it was a huge sell wall. It was 30,000 bitcoins at $300 each.
Okay.
So
yeah.
$9 million was enough to be considered a bear
whale. Huge.
And back, like, in 2014.
And the problem was, it happened over a weekend because you couldn't get cash to Bitstamp fast enough. And, like, everybody's calling up Bitstamp being like, advance me credit. Like, I'm trying to, like, buy this thing. So it was chaos. But, like, that was supposedly a corporate that had to puke a bunch because the price had gone down so much and they needed runway. But just a monster, huge one-offer wall that eventually gets chewed through. But it was just chaos. But, like, crap like that was happening all through 14, 15, just of, like, people getting blown out of it. And, like, that was largely a demand-side problem, right? Like, it's $9 million. Like, you could get that now, but it was hard back then. Like, there's not really a ton of real money flowing into this thing. Pantera was, like, the only, like, big name fund that was, like, chucking money around. And they were already a risk on, and they were probably underwater on it on that time. So anyway, yeah, like, that, the backdrop of the halving in 16 is it was terrible for, like, 18 months. And it shook a lot of people, and it was bad. So really, anything you could rally around, people were like, I'm going to rally around this, right? Like, you had to, like, it was so negative, like, in the industry that, like, anything that would turn around, people were all over it. And which we definitely saw, right? People were like, oh, halving, like, it's happening. And, like, that's self-enforcing, right? Like, if you build up enough, like, momentum around something, it can, like, become its own, like, thing, right? Like, this is, like, what I believe a lot of TA is, right? Like, it's self-fulfilling mm-hmm. in that sense. So that, we definitely saw people piling into that thing through that event. Like, it 100% happened. And it was, like, a good run-up. And, like, it also just had a really good bid for, like, 3 or 4 months into that thing. Like, it traded really well right up into it. But then on the back half of it, Bitfinex gets hacked, right? If I remember this correctly, it's, like, not shortly after they get popped. And then that just sends the whole thing tumbling. But then it recovers pretty well from that. That coin still sits there. I don't think it's moved at all. Nobody's mm-hmm. touched that thing. So it effectively took another 100,000 coin out of circulation. It's, like, sort of off to the races. But, like, again, it's about how much demand side there really is. And that's, like, impossible to really get a good grasp on in crypto. Like, over, like, a long horizon, it's been up, right? Like, there's net demand per day for crypto than there is the historical day. Like, that's, like, sort of been the trend. And if you think about it, right, like, that $9 million order was massive and, like, crushed everything. That's, like, what you have in inflation a day in Bitcoin. Like, it's just crazy how much more capital, like, sort of has been allocated to this as like an asset class. And as long as that aggregate demand that you have over like some quarterly or weekly or monthly like basis is more than your inflows of like inflation, like, it's going to go up. Like, the futures can whip it around in the short term because you can like synthetically sort of like create, right, volume. Like, you can create, not coin, but like you can put sales pressure on something without actually having it. But like, it's not, you're not going to fight that forever. Like, if there's more bid on this thing than there is like coming out in the pipe to get sold, then yeah, it's going to go. So like, I also think you can't just dismiss this thing. You can't just be like, it's priced in, like, people know about it. It's like, well, like, you can know about it, but if there's more money flying in this thing, like, I don't see how it doesn't like go up. And considering we've been holding water for the last 4 years, like, we should be fine. That being said, Bitcoin traded under 4,000 for, I don't know what, like 4 or 5 months, like maybe longer. Like, it's completely possible that like there's only enough cash to keep us at like 6,000. And like 3,000 was like where it was balanced out. So like, I don't know, like, it could balance either or. But as long as the trend is like in the favor of like more cash trying to get into this thing than there is like before, like, yeah, it should go up. So I don't know. I think it's bullish and I think it's important. I just think it's really more, though, as always, like a bigger question on the demand side.
Thanks to our sponsor, Bitstamp, for making this special halving series possible. Bitstamp's the original global crypto exchange. We're proud to be celebrating their third Bitcoin halving. Doesn't get much more OG than that. So 2011, Bitstamp's been the preferred exchange for serious traders and investors worldwide, with over 4 million customers, including top financial institutions. They've got some serious trading tech, matching engine from NASDAQ, the best APIs in the industry, and TradeView, their advanced trading interface with live charting and deep analytical tools that are available on web and mobile. So you can join the 4 million traders on Bitstamp by downloading their app, the App Store or Google Play, or go to bitstamp.net/pro to get started. And a reminder for Bitstamp users, Messari is now offering 25% off of Messari Pro, our professional analytics toolkit with best-in-class research and advanced tools to help identify your next investments using promo code Bitstamp. That's Messari.io, offer code Bitstamp to get ahead of the crypto curve.
So let's talk. Yeah, I mean, I think as you get closer to the actual day itself, especially back in kind of first halving and second halving, but first halving probably didn't matter because it was still just so small from a nominal basis. Second halving was probably marginally more important. But, you know, you really, I think, have to talk about two timescales. One is like the 6 months around the halving, where it does become a self-fulfilling prophecy or a meme of sorts to trade around. But there is the event itself and some of the dislocations that could create for mining, for just general shock for kind of consistent buyers or consistent sellers. What were some of the kind of key trends that you saw as you know, on the Circle desk were interfacing daily with some of the largest miners, some of the other kind of largest exchange operators and OTC, you know, other OTC desks? Was there, what were, if any, the kind of wacky supply and demand dynamics that happened around the mining cut in particular?
Well, so our experience with like miners is that, I think like Nick Carter called this like pro-cyclical or whatever, right? Like, as the price goes up, they sell less. Like, they tend to try to be as long crypto as they can be. And I say crypto because like a lot of them are mining multiple things now. They're like big operations. But in general, they want as much risk to the underlying as they can. So like, you get these situations where on the downside, they become distressed sellers. And on the upside, they just like pull all the, like the offers. And you end up getting exacerbated moves up and down because of that flow. There is like the reality though, they just like net have less inventory coming in every day. And like, we saw this definitely in the back half of 2016, it was like harder to get larger chunks from miners, but it wasn't impossible to like we could find it elsewhere. Like, it was like on exchange, it was like on screens. Like, we were able to like get it out, but like, that's a real sort of drain that comes in. I mean, we were buying a lot of coin every day just to like take care of like the retail app. Let alone like OTC flow that we were seeing in, but like, it was really driven any intraday sort of like movement on like how much was like bid, like how many people were like looking to get into it. Cause the miners like chunky, the flow is a little bit different. And like I said, like they tend to just exacerbate the moves. But if you want to talk about like events leading up into the halving, like the one that's about to happen, people forget this, but and I guess I forget because it was like 2 months ago, but right before like the world fell apart with all this COVID stuff, the implied lending rate via the futures curve was like 40% on some of the Asian exchanges. I think it was like 30% on like CME. That is like kind of like the max leverage you're seeing the industry try to put on to be like long Bitcoin, right? That is like the most, like if you have a meter of like frothiness, like that's it right there. And it probably would have kept going into the like halving, and we would have gotten this like just continued leveraging up into it and then probably a blowout. But they all died because the whole global economy just like went down, right? So like Bitcoin had like this shock to it that really wasn't like in anybody's like plans. And all that leverage got washed out of the system, right? Like this is why there was just so many massive liquidations. I mean, you saw MEX's open interest go from like 1.1 billion to 350 million on like the bottom. That was a ton of leverage just getting sucked out of the system. So that was like the people putting on Bitcoin for the halving trade, and they all just got smoked. So it's going to be like real interesting to see how this thing like I wouldn't say I was like,
I feel bad for the people that are listening to this in their earphones, because they can't look at how giddy you are.
I'm not kidding. Look, it was painful. Like, I mean, like we own crypto, like we are a net long biased like shop. Like I was sitting there like not happy, but at the same time, I'm like, you can't, this asset class, it routinely is like 150, 200 ball product. You can't just like go 50X and then like pray. Like, I mean, you can, but it's just like, it's not a great strategy. So I don't know. Like I have my, like if you're just like messing around and you're like, want to like gamble, like that's fine. But like, I don't know, if you're running any material money, you get, I don't know. I just think the risk controls in this industry in general are like wonked. But no, like, I mean, that, what happened post that, like that blow up, was so exacerbated by like the leverage that was forced into the system. And I think a lot of that was people trying to get long into the halving. I think people were talking about it. Like, I'm pretty sure that was like a real trade that was happening. I thought a lot of that leverage was going to unwind post the halving, right? Like event happens, supply drains up, like a lot of that leverage starts to unwind, that sell pressure, that'll probably even out. And like, you won't see, a lot of the air will come out of this thing post that. But now you've got basically like the most unowned rally of all time. Like futures basis was negative, meaning that you got paid to be long the entire way up. Like that's so rare that like you have a 2x rally off the lows and longs get paid the whole way through, right? So that means that you have a real cash market bid that's like buying versus like futures, which are levering the thing up. So you've had all this, you get all these people that get washed out on like the levered side long. There's no levered like buying on like the way up for the most part, because everybody is like, no, like it's manipulated, it's going down. It's like everybody's fighting the tape the whole way up. So shorts are paying. And then you're here basically where we started 3 months ago, and now we get to halving. Like, I don't know. It's weird that a trade I thought was gonna be bearish on the back half is like suddenly bullish because of like the setup that happened the first 3 months before. But this like also gives the point, it's like you never know what's gonna happen in markets in like any short period of time, right? Like nobody saw this meltdown of everything and then the subsequent response like from fiscal and monetary policy. I don't know, it's interesting, but you definitely saw, like just because the price didn't go up into the halving doesn't mean people were trying to like get long this thing as much as they possibly could. They were just met with an exogenous shock that they like weren't planning for or couldn't be planning for.
Yeah, crypto markets don't exist in a bubble.
There's people on the other side of these trades, right? Like there's people losing jobs. Like there's people who are getting decimated in whatever other asset class they have at the same time. So like you can say it's uncorrelated, but like I said, this is what goes back to the Bay Hill thing. Like everything becomes beta one, like at some point, right? Like things get bad enough, like it's bad enough for everything.
Mm-hmm. So I guess having said all that, right, you kind of talked about the pre-trading environments. Now we're getting right up to it. And you've got a couple of different, you know, factors in play. One, you're going to start to see, I think, an acceleration of mainstream media coverage around this particular event. Because we've seen a leg up in pricing, Jefferies, chief strategist, just came out earlier today. With you know, pretty crazy recommendation to you know, buy Bitcoin ahead of the halving. I have a feeling in light of the macro backdrop and everything that's happened with you know, Fed and fiscal stimulus that this is going to get some legs, and we might be in the meme part of the cycle. What are you looking at as key indicators around the futures curve, the lending, you know, rates and funding rates, even maybe the derivatives. I know, I think, you know, these are probably still too illiquid for a veteran trader to actually dabble in. Talk about things like Deribit and what have you. But what are the KPIs and kind of key dislocations that you're looking for, or at least aware of going into the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, so that, I mean, we do trade the ball products. I tend to think the most important thing to pay attention to in crypto at any given time is like what the aggregate leverage is and like which direction it's skewed. That being said, so the whole rally up was like underowned in the sense that like you had backwardation in the curve and you had perp funding consistently going to the longs. And like the lending market with Genesis like mirrored basically the same thing as like the curvature in crypto. A great thing for all your viewers, for people who are long crypto and like don't care about triggering tax events, when the curve goes backwardated, you can effectively, as long as you're willing to take exchange exposure, make free crypto with your crypto, if that makes sense, right? So if you got 100 Bitcoin, you can deposit it on an exchange, you can buy the back of the curve, you can sell spot, and then you can like collect that premium, which will net you free Bitcoin.
And buying and backwardation, buying the back of the curve refers to the futures curve.
Right. So, right. Exactly. It's some work, but like you'll get free yield on it and you'll trigger tax things. So like, that's like obviously an individual, you could trigger a tax loss maybe, I don't know, but like it's an interesting thing that doesn't happen a lot in crypto, but you get a couple shots at it every year. It was really backwardated at the bottom. Like when the world was like falling apart and like MEX was just about to like pull the plug. Like June was, I don't know, like 10-12% under spot, which is wild. That same contract, right? So that thing went from going, what did I say, like 30% annualized to, I don't know, what does that like work out to? Like 60% negative, right? Like it swung massively. Like it just went from max bullish to max bearish in 4 days.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, but like that's so. Anyway, we look a lot at what the curvature looks like as like a direction of like where stuff's going. And that will tell you a lot, like what's going on in the cash markets versus what's going on in like the levered markets, is those like interplays between each other. So I guess like what else is important? Like so, realized vol was really low, and implied vol is even lower. Like a week, actually, like 3 days ago. So before this big pop and like run up. It was like, I think we bought some at the money straddles at like a 40 vol, like really cheap stuff. Bitcoin like historically is like a 65, give or take. And like for people who don't trade vol, like implied vols are just like a measure of how volatile something's going to be. So like,
yeah, and compare that to like, a big tech stock,
like a big tech stock will probably be like a 20. Or like when the world is falling apart, they were probably like 40s and 50s. But like, I don't know, 2025 is probably like a fair number, like depending for it. Like a real big S&P stock is probably like a 15 or something like that.
Yep.
And Bitcoin is like consistently a 60, which is pretty volatile. And like a currency will be like single digits. But like 40s is really low. And then obviously like popped up, but like in general, like people have been really excited about selling vol, meaning like they think the world's going to be less volatile going forward, which is interesting. So it's like sort of pricing in a halving that's going to be, or at least it was, like they've obviously popped up. We'll see where they baseline back going into the event, but that like the world post the halving isn't going to be that crazy. At least implied, which I think is probably right. Like, I think it's not like it happens and then everybody's like, oh my God, I got to trade, right? Like their gradual effects are going to take a couple months to play out. There might be some like shocks around like miners that have to chuck some inventory, but like you had this big flush, right? Like you had the market trade down so fast, so quickly that like any of those like miners that were like massively levered or like had positions that they shouldn't be holding, like they chucked them. They like puked it. Like it happened. We like had the big flush. So we'll see how that plays on the back half of it. And like supply will be less.
One thing that's interesting, you know, people talk about the Bitcoin halvings as if they're something that happened in isolation, but we know that there are a handful of other assets that have gone through the same thing. So Bitcoin Cash, obviously, right, on a relatively similar cycle to Bitcoin, Litecoin has had a couple of halvings, and maybe most notably because of the era in which it was born and kind of the liquidity it has right now, might be Zcash is having coming up later this year. How have you thought about those other halvings? I mean, do they even register, or is it just so Bitcoin dependent and narrative dependent that it's too liquid to really care one way or the other?
So BCH and BSV. So the way I think it, I'll start at them like in order. So Litecoin's halving got bid really. So like that one was one where like there wasn't a lot else going on at the time. So like a lot of traders piled into that thing. And it had a huge run up, and then it basically just got like chucked right into it, right? And you'll see this like with a lot of things, like the Litecoin halving in particular. Like it wasn't a ton of change in the supply, and like which I would also say about like the Bitcoin one, it's not like you're seeing a massive reduction, but like it mattered in the sense that like it was something coming out of it. But like traders really ran that thing up and then like chucked it on the backside. So it was like a very, I wouldn't say it was like this core like trade that was going on with like supply and demand imbalances. It was like a real like we're gonna run this thing up and then we're gonna like chuck it kind of thing, and it was like a hot potato that people were trying to play around with. So that was kind of how, and then so like people look at that Litecoin one and then they get really bearish the Bitcoin one, but like the difference is like Bitcoin has monster issuance every day, and like it has a huge supply and demand like balance that's going on. There's a ton of money going in versus like Litecoin, which is needs to garner less, but it's like a lot harder to get. So like I don't view that as like, oh, this is like definitely what's gonna happen on Bitcoin. BCH and BSV. So I think the way it was is BCH went first and then BSV was like 2 days later. I don't know, there's some like wonkiness with like how the blocks got like mined in the beginning. But I mean they ran up like the 2 days before and then they basically were like flat after. Like they didn't get crushed, but they also didn't like have a ton of bit. And like I think these are like other ones where it's hard because there, it's unclear there's enough demand in the market currently to eat half of it, let alone the whole previous block reward subsidy. You know, like those things are a lot harder. Their demand side looks way more volatile than Bitcoin or Ether do. So like that makes it a lot less relevant in terms of that being said, like I will bet you money if like there's any sudden interest in either of those in like a short period of time, they're going to move up a lot faster because like, it's going to be a lot, there's less bullets to get thrown at it at any given time. If that makes sense, right? Like you get this weird sort of like gap risk to the upside because like the inventory to like shoot down gets less. But that being said, you still need people to like cross and be looking to like buy it. On the Zcash one's a little more interesting because it's bigger, right? Like it's their first block reward subsidy. So it cuts down a percentage of the inflation as a lot. So like that one has the potential, but again, it's hard. Like, is there enough to eat like half the Zcash inflation versus like the full reward? Like it's unclear. Like that one's going to be another one where like, what's like the true baseline demand of this thing that's sitting around, but you definitely get the same thing where there's like gap risk to the upside after it. The problem with like a lot of these two is like, it's like BCH and BSV. Like there was a lot of like halving coming, like it's the big thing. And then it happens and it's like, all right, what's next, right? Like what am I looking forward to on this like asset class? Like why am I holding it? So like you lose a little bit of that because you can't be like, well, there's another one in 4 years. Like, all right, well, like that's like not going to keep anybody's attention. So you lose definitely some eyeballs on that side of it.
There's kind of one chart that's floating around now that, you know, as we're recording this, it's the 1st of May, Bitcoin, traders will look at moving averages quite a bit. It's, you look at everything, right? But one of the ones that's most interesting right now, if you look at a yearly moving average, we're about to break our all-time high for Bitcoin, which I don't know how you think about like stats like that. If they're just kind of like, oh, it makes for an interesting headline, but there's not much signal there, or how you actually think about things like moving averages and how they kind of tie back to the sea change of price trends, or if it's just kind of a nothing backward looking, nice to write headlines about, but not a real good leading indicator.
I would say it's useful in the sense that other people find it useful. So like we ourselves like do not look at it and like draw a bunch of lines and be like, we think this is like a resistance point, all that jazz. But like that being said, we're cognizant that like a large portion of the trading community does pay attention to these things. So like we definitely pay attention to them as well. we look at them as more as like inflection points for like Vol. Like if like, let's say like Vol is pretty cheap and there's like some giant wedge or something like that's coming up. Like, I don't necessarily know what that means about price action. And like, you'll a lot of times see like people with the same like event on some TA thing happening and it like will have different results. But what we tend to assume is like, all right, this thing's going to probably do something. So like we can bet on that as like an event that we think will happen. And then like we'll, depending on like if we think there's like a large imbalance of like people that would be looking to do something, like we may position ahead of it. But like directionally, like we don't use it a lot. And like I said, like this is the thing with Bitcoin, is like it's just gone up. So like all of your like backtesting of any of your TA stuff is going to be like, well, it goes up after. And it's like, all right, like, yeah, because it's gone up. Like, it's just, this is all circular.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's some merit to it, right? Because currencies don't have valuations, right? They're priced, not valued, to use the shorthands, because you don't have any kind of fundamental drivers like earnings.
But you have central bank action, you have like policy, you have like government. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I would say that like trading Forex, not that I've ever done in any like large capacity, but like I would say those things have probably the most, mm-hmm. like way more than earnings, right? Like they have all kinds of stuff that can like give exogenous shocks to it.
Well, I mean, my point being that with currencies, narratives matter, right? I mean, all currencies are just a confidence game. So the meme matters more going into the halving, this kind of quantitative hardening, or the fact that you know, X number of holders are above water. There are all these other softer ways to kind of assess the relative positioning, not just of the currency, the protocol, but the community of holders that are currently bought in to this narrative. That, you know, should help people understand, you know, where the trajectory is, because you know, this isn't like December of 2017 right now, like the slow and steady groundswell. You're seeing accumulation. You're seeing more addresses with 0.1 Bitcoin, with 1 Bitcoin, with 10 Bitcoin, right? And it's been this kind of gradual process through which people have you know, kind of prepared for this moment. It would be difficult to imagine as a layperson the halving hitting and then there just being kind of like a market sell order, right? Like the traditional sell the news event, because it feels like people are going to be waiting for this meme to play out, and that creates more holding and it kind of just snowballs from there.
Well, there's definitely a bunch of people who are like bearish post the halving because they think there's going to be like minor capitulation. Mm-hmm. My like big argument against that has just been like, I think they already capitulated and I think they already got like stomped out. So there's definitely people that have like the counter thoughts still, right? Like this is going to be like bad for a while before it gets good. Like it's weird. Like, I don't know. I used to always like laugh when like you see like some analyst come on and he's like, we think the stock's going to go down 20% and then it's going to go up to new all-time highs. And it's like, that's just like not useful information to me. It's like, you're like basically just hedging all of your bets with like what you're saying. So like people who do this with like crypto, I find it the same way. They're like, we think it's like, I think it's going to trade to 7,800 and then it's going to go to 11. I'm like, all right. So then like, you're just like telling me nothing. There's nothing of value here. You're just like guessing a random path that you like think might be able to like, you could go back and say, oh, like it was going to happen anyway. You know, like, I don't know. I find that like sort of like trading like thesis stuff like weird. And I find a lot of TA is like that, in the sense that they're just like, everything is double speak a little bit of like what can or can't happen. I think at the end of the day, it's like, it is bullish, as you said, but like, it's going to depend a lot on like how much was baked into the system on leverage going into that event that's going to potentially need to unwind. And I think it's very little, because I think all of that leverage got sucked out already.
Which is good news.
Which is good. Yeah. I mean, look, what you don't want is a rally on people leveraging, especially when they're like doing it on their crypto holdings, up the entire way, right? Like that's bad in the sense, because that's all got to unwind. Mm-hmm. What's good in the sense is if you have like a true cash market bid where there's like excess demand moving into the system, which I think you've largely had over the last month and a half. I think that's stable. That's good. That's like better. And that will be a lot better if you start cutting down the supply as well. So I mean, look, like we're bullish the back half of this thing. Like we think it's like net overall good, Like, do I think the day of it'll like trade up? Like, I have no idea. But like, I don't think it's going to be like suddenly like everyone decides they have to do something. I don't know. Like, there's not a ton of people over the last month that haven't like hit some price target that they were probably had in their head, right? Especially on the downside.
Yep. Absolutely. Well, it's going to be fun watching it with you. I'm sure we'll be texting and tweeting and telegramming back and forth.
But hope it's not in the middle of the night.
Yeah, right. But you know, it's worth staying up for sometimes.
Oh, definitely gonna do it. I just would be way more clutch, like 11:30 a.m.
Well, hopefully the miners do the work just to triangulate on that sweet spot for us.
Yeah, we'll see what I can do.
Dan, always a pleasure, and thank you for joining us for this. Hopefully this was a good 101 on markets history. Dan is an encyclopedia of knowledge on all things halvings related and major price action related, particularly with, of course, the last few months because it's most recent, but just in general. So hope you all enjoyed this special edition of Unqualified Opinions with someone whose opinion is very much qualified versus my own. So thanks again, man. And for everybody that's listening, that's watching, be good, stay safe. Until next time, peace.
That's a wrap. Thanks for listening. New episodes of Unqualified Opinions go live weekdays at noon Eastern Time. You can follow me in the meantime on Twitter at 2BitIdiot if you want to continue the conversation or troll me. Otherwise, I'll see you next week.